up their ears and open their heart and listen to these words far as a universal message to all nations. God is the respecter of no one. He's the maker of all man and no man. Righteousness is love. The treasures of righteousness is love. Righteousness is love. The treasures of righteousness is love.
You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. I'm going to break down a few news items from the Metro. I apologize. I spent a couple hours last night chopping up a bunch of radio clips, but do not have a working interface between the computer and the mixing board that I can use off my MP3 player and USB key. So not going to happen today, at least as far as I can tell. But we will play through the pain. It is not a big deal. Got a number of topics, number of things on my mind out there. Also have the option of calling in this morning. 416-595-1655 is the number. Again, 416-595-1655 is the number. There are a number of topics out there that dominate our conversations, for better or worse, for longer or shorter periods of time. And so if you want to bring any of those up, again, the number is 416-595-1655. One thing we see in the media a lot these days is WikiLeaks. And, you know, after hearing especially the work of the founder of Cryptome.org, which does much the same as WikiLeaks, but Here we go. Which does much the same as WikiLeaks, but they're far less promoted by the mass media. And his analysis a few months ago or a few weeks ago on the Alex Jones Show. I'm if you add that to Webster Tarpley's analysis, to Alex Jones' analysis, to my own analysis of enough media coverage of it by now, I notice that it looks like an intelligence operation. It looks like a big game being played on the world by Western intelligence agencies who selectively leak things through the media. And, you know, Julian Assange may or may not be in on this. He's the founder of WikiLeaks, the organization that's releasing hundreds of thousands of pages of documents that are apparently leaked to them and then quickly picked up by the mass media, especially working with sort of six of the major media outlets, including the New York Times and others, in this latest round of revelations. And so many of the revelations support sort of the foreign policy objectives we've seen discussed in the last couple of years anyway. The bombing of Iran potentially. The instability in the Afghanistani government and the weakness of Karzai as a leader. And a lot of the sniping, the diplomatic sniping that goes on. The way I look at this, you know, and again, just in looking at what the media is picking up and how this is being sold to us, it works on a number of fronts. You don't have a story this big that dominates that much of our, you know, commercial news real estate without it being for a number of purposes. So, you know, and if you go to Cryptome, CryptOme, or you Google Cryptome and the Alex Jones Show, you can find a copy of the interview with the founder of Cryptome.org, who also worked with Assange and didn't have that many nice things to say about him, Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, so much the media these days. Cryptome makes sure they have physical copies as well as digital copies, because physical copies can be, verified, and digital copies can always be manipulated. WikiLeaks doesn't have that same kind of safeguard. So the operation. Well, if they get us all to think that these types of leaks, you know, not all, if they get the bulk of the public to accept the idea, tacitly or actively agree to the idea that leaks of this sort can cause national security issues and can endanger the lives of soldiers or intelligence agents or whomever, or efforts to protect us from terrorists or whomever, then they can use a public backlash against WikiLeaks that's engineered in the media to clamp down on all whistleblowers, on all websites, on all blogs, and on the internet in general for revealing this type of information. So they can get us to go along with that if they make a big enough deal out of this. And there's calls for Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, to be assassinated. He's got that rape charge in Sweden, which I heard was actually because the second time he had sex with a woman, he didn't use a condom, and she wanted him to. I don't know what the negotiations were, but, there's something like that floating about. But there's a whole bunch of stories like that, and there's an Interpol warrant out on him. And yet, for some reason, you know, the Pentagon and these other intelligence agencies with their massive surveillance networks can't find this guy. He's doing interviews on Google, you know, on streaming video around the world and on radio shows and television shows. And yet, you know, the spy agencies in the world who supposedly want him dead can't find him, can't shut down the sites, you know, and couldn't shut down earlier the sites where, you know, he was posting these documents, although more recently there's been some action on that. But this is the second or third round of documents from this guy. And the way this is playing out, you know, over the course of a few months, looks to me like some sort of larger propaganda operation. So there's a bit on WikiLeaks, those wacky leaks. You can see a lot of the content that's released is quite silly. You know, Canada's inferiority complex and different diplomats, you know, talking behind the scenes about what they think about different countries. And countries coming out. I mean, the leader of Iran has come out and said, yeah, this looks like an intelligence op. And, you know, I have to say I don't like him. because in our culture, we've been taught that he's the next Saddam. Like, you can't say that. And, you know, I don't like him per se. I don't know him well to like him. I don't know the policies of Iran that well. What I do know is this, is that he's come out on 9/11 Truth, and he's come out on false flag terrorism and government staging things. He's come out on the cabal of super rich people and cabals of super rich people that manage policy, like other leaders have and like other politicians have. And so in those areas, I'm willing to think that he's doing what he can to try and save his country. And that I find to be noble in the face of the sort of 5 or 6 years of threats by the U.S. and Israel to bomb Iran. So, you know, for what it's worth. I'm going to read an article from Zen Gardner from Before It's News, courtesy of Infowars.com here. It says, is the internet 9/11 underway? Think about it. Where is this seemingly staged WikiLeaks fear taking us? While we participate in digging into the juicy tidbits of information that incriminate just about anybody and everybody, where is it all going? Lessons of 9/11. While 9/11 served as a wake-up call to those awake and aware enough to see the obvious demolitions and misinformation and resultant, quote, Pearl Harbor effect, most of the world fell for it. And now, people are literally bending over, as in airport screenings, to the onslaught of police state fascism worldwide. It's staggering. In fact, it's Orwellian. The armies, police, and private sector are at war with the vague concept of terrorism, an unbeatable enemy in a war that could be drawn out indefinitely and fought in any arena necessary. And what was the result of this declared war on terrorism? Not a war on terror, but an increase in fear and terror, all to justify the economic, social, and political clampdown that has followed. What will the WikiLeaks debacle herald? You guessed it, the last bastion of freedom and expression, a free internet, will topple. After all, if information is now the enemy, we must carefully police any and every aspect of this dangerous medium, all for the safety and protection of, quote, we the people. Oh, we'll still have the internet, just like you can still fly. You'll just have to be on the, quote, approved list, screened, stamped, zapped, mugged, and molested if you want to get on the net. No biggie. Thanks, Julian. Job well done. And here's a couple of warning signs cited here by Zen Gardner from Before It's News, courtesy of Infowars.com, a December 5th article. WikiLeaks, way too approved and publicized. Every TV and cable network, press worldwide, official recognition from every level of government. Now, most of the time when government secrets are released and they don't want to talk about it, they don't talk about it. They don't want to dignify with a response and give the press something to pick up. They don't talk about it. And if the government doesn't comment on accusations against it, journalists often can't run the story because they haven't gotten an official comment and they don't want to be accused of slander or doing something, you know, illegal or journalistically unethical. And so, you know, the article makes a great point here. Heck, he even does a TED talk. Where's anyone else trying to expose the agenda? Only Julian. Number two, biggie. This supposed system fighter says 9/11 truth issue is, quote, a distraction. Mustn't step on your boss's toes now, should we, Julian? Very suspicious if you ask me. And MP George Galloway out of England also says 9/11 truth is crazy, it's a distraction. He's a guy who I've thought's been a fraud for a while now. And I know people, I've had conversations with people that like him, and I try to be nice about it, but I'm like, this guy is a liar. He does some things that you know, in a limited hangout way, are interesting. He's spoken here in Toronto before. When the Canadian government stopped him from coming into the country, at the pressure of certain groups, you know, over the Palestine-Israel issue, then you know, he was given more credibility for that. And again, when you see this process so actively managed in the mass media, then you know, you can guess that these heroes like Galloway, like Julian Assange, are meant for us to follow and meant for us to believe in, but not in fact telling the truth, because if so, then they wouldn't be given that kind of coverage and that kind of hagiography in the media, that kind of celebrated treatment The leader of Code Pink as well. She got stopped at the border, couldn't get into Canada, and that gave her even more credibility with her followers. But I don't trust that group, and I don't trust how they get into, you know, congressional hearings and so on, with giant banners and pink shirts and suddenly disrupt things before they're dragged out. Sort of feigning nobility. Part of the MoveOn.org, sort of Democratic Party, support, the left-wing liberal support there, that's managed just like the right-wing right-wing conservative support is managed in the mainstream public eye. And here's WikiLeaks and Assange's sketchy background. The WikiLeaks website first appeared on the internet in December 2006. The site claims to have been founded by Chinese dissidents, journalists, mathematicians, and startup company technologists from the U.S., Taiwan, Europe, Australia, and South Africa. The creators of WikiLeaks have not been formally identified. That's in bold. It has been represented in public since January 2007 by Julian Assange and others. Assange describes himself as a member of WikiLeaks' advisory board. So we don't actually know who's behind this. And there's Watch the Hype. There's a growing crescendo of anger and hate that is now being whipped up to the point that Assange is being called a new kind of terrorist. And more disturbingly, and as expected, the comparison is now being drawn between Assange and Bin Laden. And it says here, social media leaks categorize Julian Assange as the Osama bin Laden of the internet. This is a guy, and the revelations themselves, the ones that we've seen in the media, they don't particularly stick with us. They're not particularly juicy. I mean, they're sexy, for the day, but they're not particularly, juicy revelations about the corruption and naming names and so on. That goes on behind the scenes of foreign policy and war and especially the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war, which WikiLeaks certainly promotes. So, there's a bit on WikiLeaks. It's a huge issue. And you can go to Infowars.com to see the rest of this article. I'd like to keep moving, but it's the way they're playing us. Is part of what causes a variety of problems. Now, I had an uncle who's got some health issues, and he told me a couple of years ago, he watches CNN all the time. I told him, uncle, can't you take up smoking instead? It's not nearly as bad for you. Because the steady diet of, North Korea this and so-and-so that, and, people are evil this and craziness that, mixed in with, random stupidity, is going to throw you off balance. So it's good to get a refresher once in a while when it comes to hard news that can cut through a lot of this. But I am looking at the cover of today's Metro, December 6, 2010. It is a Monday. Katie and others salute the troops on page 23. So let's take a look. Celebrities are being used to sell all sorts of insanity. Always have been. But it's only stepping up these days as, sort of celebrity activism becomes more and more accepted and more directed in the world of consolidating media. It says here, Katy Perry performs on stage at the VH1 Diva Salute the Troops in San Diego. Saluting the troops, Perry reigns as VH1 Divas pay homage to U.S. service men and women. Quote, I really had to live up to the definition of a diva in all senses of the word. So I have to be very difficult today and late. And this type of behavior, this prima donna diva behavior, where it used to be crapped on, is now celebrated. You can see the changes in our culture. Being a diva used to be a bad thing. If you were a diva, at a local theater, if you were to act like that without being a true superstar, and even then, just getting away with it by virtue of your celebrity and your fame. And having people accept, your faults. It used to be a bad thing to be a diva. Now it's a good thing. And so on with the article here. Katy Perry loves a man in uniform. The pop superstar met dozens of service members while working on the special VH1 Diva Salute the Troops this weekend near San Diego. Quote, there was a kid who I met backstage who was rather chatty but adorable, Perry recalled. He was really sweet. He was 19. He had such a good heart. He said, yes, ma'am, to me. Yes, ma'am. I was like, okay, yes, sir. A VH1 publicist estimates an audience of 27,000 attended the nearly three-hour taping of the concert Friday night at the Marine Corps Air Station in Miramar. The show, which aired last night, featured a bounty of what the network has dubbed divas. female or female lead musical acts, including established stars such as Heart, Paramore, and Sugarland, as well as hot newcomers Grace Potter, The Nocturnals, Keri Hilson, and Nicki Minaj. But if one diva emerged supreme, it was Perry, who both opened and closed the show and performed solo or with others on a half dozen songs, twice that of anyone else in the lineup. Quote, "I really had to live up to the definition of a diva in all senses of the word," Perry joked, "so I'd be very difficult today and late," she continued, adding that she was really neither. Perry went on to reference Beyonce's song Diva, then proceeded to lose the lyric. "Blah, I'm obviously not Beyonce," Perry laughed. "She is the true diva." This is the cover of the Metro. And the idea of putting up a bunch of these pretty girls, you know, in front of the soldiers and saying, there, you know, like a little TNA bride. You know, it's amazing. And this is what we're given to focus on, with a million things happening and our country's being sold out from under us, which shows you why we have trouble handling it. You know, can you say that the troops are bad? No. Can you say the pretty girls and that the talented singers are bad for entertaining the troops? No. But can you say that this process and this being promoted and this, you know, undertaking is somehow, you know, weakening our resolve to deal with the military-industrial complex? Probably. On stage, Perry pulled out all the stops and the costumes, with opening numbers featuring Perry Hilson, Sugarland's Jennifer Nettles in whack uniforms for a cover of the Andrews Sisters' 40s classic Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. Perry closed the show with her current smash, Firework, which concluded inappropriately with a fireworks display. For that finale, Perry wore a cherry red beaded gown with a thigh-high slit that looked as if it was borrowed from Jessica Rabbit's closet. "You know me, I love vintage," Perry explained. "I love pin-up girls." And there is a picture of her here in the Jessica Rabbit outfit, looking smoking hot on page 23 of the Metro. It says here, happy couple. Perry, 26, and her new husband, actor Russell Brand, will be spending their first holiday season together as husband and wife. Quote, "What do I want for Christmas? Well, I think what is appropriate now is I hope the troops come home very safely," Perry replied. Again, can you see the process of this being managed? You know, a lot of people love celebrities more than they love most people. Like, they will defend whoever it is, from you know, the actor Barry Sotero, a.k.a. Barack Obama, from stars on their favorite vampire shows. You know, ladies, if you find yourself dating a vampire, it might be something you read or watched. Because, again, normalizing that type of psychopathy in our culture. But you know, they're very, very carefully managed, and it just takes sort of a double take at what we all see them say to realize that. Her message to the troops, quote, "Keep your Skype and your iChat on, because I know some of them are away from all their family and wives. I can understand that feeling once in a while because I am on the battlefield myself, but I am just singing pop songs." There you go. The conflation of this, the use of the terminology, basketball games, it's a war, hockey games, it's a war, UFC fights, it's a war out there. And now, singing pop songs is on a battlefield, a cultural battlefield. And she's right in the sense of there is a war on for our minds. And this type of thing is how we're being confused on a subtle subconscious level about what's really going on. Another article here, the work holiday party, often a victim of a shaky economy. Now, one might think, hey, they're reporting on the economy, but they're normalizing this shaky economy here on page 31. And we'll just take a look at how they do this. Experts say companies should honor staff at holidays, not cancel festivities despite tough times. Quote, "If you're already worried about your company's financial status, canceling the party kind of sends a doom and gloom message." And you know what's interesting about this? Webster Griffin Tarpley at tarpley.net, tarpley.net, talked about the Carter malaise in the 1970s, and he predicted there would be an Obama malaise too, where Zbigniew Brzezinski, the kind of Henry Kissinger of the left, top globalist national security advisor, probably one of the top few dozen people in the world in terms of managing it, His project, Jimmy Carter, back in the 70s, the humble peanut farmer who came to power, was responsible, his administration and policies, by design, of course, as he was put into, you know, sell them or execute them from the office of president, created the Carter malaise in the 1970s, where people just kind of felt sort of blah. And the worse the economy got, because there were some serious economic times in the late 70s, the less people wanted to talk about it, because it was, you know, depressing, and things are bad enough, so you don't want to talk about it. Except the problem with that is then you don't know how to deal with it. You don't know how to figure it out. You know, you can't cathartically express your anger and frustration. And so when you see articles like this here in the Metro, you can see how this process is created, because when we look at this as advice, both specifically for throwing an office party and generally for the media says, you know, this is how we're supposed to think, then, you know, you can see the sense in it, the logic in it. You know, we're going through a recession right now. Yes, they kind of said it's over, but now they say we're still in it. But they're still kind of saying that it might be over later. And they are kind of saying that our governments are doing the best, you know, thing they can to help us get out of it. But at the same time, you know, once that definition is settled on, and then we just try and keep it happy all the time in conversation, we can't really, it's not natural. It's not natural. And that's not to say that you can't be happy. It's just that the highs and lows are kind of getting rubbed out as we're all sort of being herded towards the Robotopia, where we're really sensitive about, you know, what people say, not because we're using our own, you know, will and confidence and ability to judge it, but because we know collectively what we're supposed to and what we're not supposed to say. And so, you know, this is the type of thing where you could become a social pariah if you decide to go against this type of thinking in our culture here. It says here, the royal family may be toasting the impending nuptials of Prince William and Kate Middleton, but it's decidedly less festive for Buckingham Palace staffers heading into the holidays. The Queen decided to cancel the annual Christmas fete because of, quote, difficult financial circumstances facing the nation. It's been a similar story for some companies on this side of the Atlantic that either scaled back or axed holiday parties in recent years. So there you got the Queen, and the royal families are being brought back. They're being brought back as celebrities, William and Kate Middleton. Getting married, the Queen's grandkids, Prince Charles's kids, Prince Charles coming back, the Queen coming back. And I saw an interview, before I go back to this, I saw an interview on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I don't watch that often. I do like it, but I do think that, that being where most people stop to sort of feel self-satisfied about, taking a vicarious shot at the establishment may be part of the problem. You know, if you can take Stewart's critique of the culture and you can, you know, say, okay, I get it. The government's lying all the time. The media's lying all the time. Politicians are lying all the time. And there's a bunch of crazy stuff that's probably going on behind the scenes. This guy just makes it easy for me to understand, you know, the first three. They're all lying and they're all idiots and they're all corrupt and we have to do something about this. Then if you can go to Infowars.com, you know, hey, maybe we're in business. So it's sort of a graduation process. Stewart will get you to the point where you know they lie. The question is, what do you do then? And is laughing about it making it easier for us to accept it? But nonetheless, Stacey Schiff, author of a new book on Cleopatra, said, Egyptian queen, a couple thousand years ago, ruled the Nile, said she was a very strong woman, said nobody knew what her face looked like except for the coins. And she said casually as part of this interview, rulers, you know, always used to put their faces on the coins they printed for circulation, gold coins, silver coins, whatever, because that would tell the people who was in charge. And now, you know, back to the sort of my thesis that the system of globalization, new world order, basically old world order behind creating a new world order, a scientific dictatorship to preserve their power and supremacy for an eternity, as they've diagrammed it, while, you know, vastly reducing and controlling the population of planet Earth is run by the British Empire and is an extension of the British Empire, you know, being reflected here. When you see who's on half the money in the world, and when you see who's on, you know, every Canadian coin, it's the Queen. So the same sort of tools that Cleopatra used a couple of thousand years ago are currently being used by the Queen Elizabeth in terms of putting her face on our money to let us know who's in charge. Amazing stuff. Back here to the economy. Let's see how they're giving us the latest economic news here from the Metro. And why the Metro? Why not? You know why? And I go back and forth here on the show here on Rude Awakening on Mondays and Thursdays as your host BK, aka BJ, here on from 6 to 7 a.m. on CKLN Radio, because I think it's important. You know, a lot of times in our culture, we're obsessed with, you know, what will entertain us. You know, even information, what will entertain us, you know, is an obsession that we have. And nothing wrong with what will entertain us. But when it comes to understanding the world you live in and trying to affect change in it, it helps to understand how we're all being affected by something. So, you know, some people say, you know, oh, I know the media lies. I don't read that stuff, or I don't read that paper. I don't whatever. And then, you know, kind of got to say, okay, do you know why they lie? Do you know what effect that's having on everybody? Do you know how that's making us all less informed and less capable of handling, you know, our political system and making smart choices when they're offered, and less, ultimately less safe. And most people, you know, are satisfied that they have a better answer than they think most have. And again, that's part of our sort of cultural programming. So back to the article here, I'll read the Metro and I'll break down some of, you know, what most of us are getting, you know, in our short attention span culture in terms of grabbing a copy on the subway or whatever, flipping through it and you know, getting our daily sort of updates, our little, you know, like a program, like Microsoft, you know, like Windows 7 or Windows XP or whatever. You know, it has a little update. You get little updates. That's what a lot of the media is, updating the base programming that we got as children and built on ever since then. So it says here, outside of the Queen situation, when it comes to canceling workplace parties like the Queen did at Buckingham Palace, it's been a similar story for some companies on this side of the Atlantic that have either scaled back or axed holiday parties in recent years. Pam McCarthy, owner of Calgary-based Five Star Events, said those who canceled their parties in 2009 either aren't having one this year or are forging ahead on a smaller scale. Quote, instead of having a full-blown party, they'll have a cocktail hour after work just for the staff only, that kind of thing, she said. They'll bring in hors d'oeuvres? I always have trouble pronouncing that. And not have a big dinner for the staff plus the guests. Tiff Daniels is director of sales with Canadian Outback Adventures and Events in Vancouver. The company designs and produces team-building initiatives and experiential learning events. Daniels recalled that in 2008, some companies canceled events even though they paid in full because they were part of a larger organization that didn't want one division having a party while others hadn't booked anything and now couldn't have one. Things have turned around since then, but celebrations aren't quite as lavish. So again, the normalization of the weak economy in conversation is what is accomplished by that. So there we go. I'm gonna flip to I'm gonna flip to an article here, a topic that I wanted to get to, and a film I wanted to shout out. Just because it was World AIDS Day recently, and I do have to go off on this. I had a beautiful clip of Christine Maggiore from the other side of AIDS.com, the late Christine Maggiore, who with her husband Robin Scoville produced a couple of movies on this. Christine Maggiore, for those of you out there who don't know, I'd like to shout her out and I'd like to play some of these clips. I had 30-something minutes of clips today I was going to play if I had a work computer, but my voice is a little dry. I'm feeling a little hoarse. I've got a little throat tickle action here, but I did bring in my own CD today. This is Thievery Corporation, the Mirror Ball Conspiracy, or the Mirror Conspiracy, and And so, you know, I'm going to try and break down some of the ideas that I had and some ideas that I have now and that I find. And, of course, you know, a look at the Metro. But Christine Maggiore was diagnosed, I guess, to be about 18 years ago now. 16 years ago when she told me this in 2007. She was diagnosed with AIDS and she felt horrible. And she was a nurse. And she went into hardcore activism when it came to promoting funding for AIDS research, and we have to cure AIDS. And so this is 2007, so I guess she got diagnosed in 91, and she went right into it. She's a beautiful, very well-spoken woman, and she a passionate advocate and honest person. And so she started saying, you know, not just for herself but for other people, we have to do something about this whole AIDS problem. And then, you know, she was advised to take another AIDS test by somebody. And you know, at first she really resisted because she thought, no, you know, she kind of, you know, had learned to live with her fate. And then she decided, you know what, I'm just going to keep fighting for this. It's crazy, you know, taking another test for no reason. But she took another AIDS test and it came back HIV negative. And she took another test and was positive. And another test was indeterminate. And another test was negative. And she started wondering what the heck is going on here. And then she started looking into the work of people like Dr. Peter Duesenberg, top retrovirologist, three-time Scientist of the Year winner, from whoever gives that out, who started questioning the official orthodoxy behind AIDS in 1987, claiming at worst, HIV is a harmless retrovirus that cycles through our system. But AZT, the drugs that they give people to try and fight AIDS, are toxic and dangerous, and they cause symptoms like nausea, appetite loss. They were banned in the 70s because they killed the animals they tested it on. So, you know, you could see a correlation between what was happening to people just based on the likely effects and the provable effects of the drug they were taking. And the AIDS industry has since moved off from AZT, claiming, you know, some claim it was a mistake to use it. But again, this is just how they resell us, you know, over and over again. So she started looking into that, and she started realizing, Christine Maggiore, that so much of what she learned was just what she repeated. She never really gave it much thought. She just learned about it, and she just repeated it. And she just said, you know, we need more money for this. You know, 43% of people might get this, and so-and-so that, and mothers this. And even the AIDS tests. You know, if you can go to aliveandwell.org or rethinkingaids.org for more on this. But even the AIDS tests are based on finding various particles in your body related to tuberculosis, herpes, even being pregnant. A previous pregnancy can leave some of those particles there. If you get enough of these and you get a low T cell count, a low white blood cell count, they will call that AIDS, as opposed to finding the squirmy little HIV virus, you know, and pulling it out and saying, aha, we got one. And there's you know, offers out there. You can win $100,000 if you find the HIV virus. You know, if you go get the blood from an AIDS patient, put it in a petri dish, you know, isolate it, and, you know, take it to, you know, use the process of virology to isolate and purify the virus. So the point I'm trying to make about this is Christine Maggiore said that as a passionate advocate for traditional AIDS orthodoxy, she hadn't thought about what she was saying. And then when she looked into it, you know, she realized that that there was much more to the story, and that it was likely the big pharmacide drugs that were killing people. Now, terrible, terrible stuff to find out, but what do you do? She became a tireless advocate for it, and then she lost her daughter and later died herself, partially of grief, partially of something else. But she was just, you know, mercilessly reamed in the media because she was very good at what she was doing, and that is being an advocate for the other side of AIDS. And so you can see more of her work at theothersideofaids.com, and I'll try and play that clip on one of the upcoming shows here on CKLN Radio. But flash forward. It's the 22nd or 23rd year of World AIDS Day. We saw the propaganda December 1st last week. It is December 6th, 5 days later. And I know that they're bringing back the AIDS myth to wreak, you know, havoc on our hypersexualized culture. Talked about it, you know, last show. Going to mention something here. dead celebrities. And that is, there's a campaign featuring Alicia Keys, Kim Kardashian, Serena Williams, Ryan Seacrest, and more. You can see some of these pictures on my blog at blackchristian.blogspot.com, where I also posted the video. And it's something called Digital Death, where a bunch of celebrities got together and decided to stage their digital deaths on World AIDS Day on December 1st. And that is, they were going to die on Twitter, die on Facebook, die on their other social networking platforms, die on Messenger. And there's pictures of Alicia Keys, Swizz Beatz, Kim Kardashian, Serena Williams, Ryan Seacrest, Jay Sean, you know, others in coffins as part of this campaign. And it says right here, I'm staring at a picture of it, Alicia Keys is dead. And at the bottom right-hand corner, it says, Keep a Child Alive is the name of the campaign. So I don't know how much these celebrities know, but I do know that this campaign is morbid. Even allhiphop.com, the site where I got this from, said it was creepy. And so as an alternative to that, I'd like to promote a video by Nicole Zwirin, that's Z-W-I-R-E-N, called Denialism, the Death of AIDS. That's denialism, denial and then I-S-M. That's what they call people who question official AIDS orthodoxy. They call them deniers. It's a reference to the Holocaust denier type thing. It's a smear. It's a slanderous term. So, you know, it's being sort of appropriated and co-opted by the people who've been labeled with it, so they can flip it back. And it says here, Denialism, the Death of AIDS. And it's a 16-minute documentary that won, you know, Best Documentary at the International Student Film Festival in California recently in 2010. This was made in 2009. And so in 16 minutes, you can look at the work of Nicole Zwirin and her thoughts on the AIDS issue and her collected thoughts of other people. And there it is on AIDS. And people absolutely hate this topic. And I apologize out there. I just know that, first of all, the AIDS genocide in Africa from big pharmacide drugs and the $50 million a year in our tax money that's going over there and so on is you know, bad enough. You know, just killing Africans is bad enough. And if you ask many people about situations like that, you know, worldwide, because of our culturally engineered, you know, misinformation, and it's, you know, a sort of laundered racism, a lot of us simply think that Africa, India, you know, these places just can't get their stuff together. You know, they're so corrupt, they're so bureaucratic, they're so backwards and so on, that they need Western intervention. You know, some people will say the UN's doing a good job in Haiti. Well, let me tell you something. If you're a plumber and you got to come fix my leaky faucet, and you're there for an hour, 2 hours, and you're making, you know, whatever, $100 an hour, $50 an hour, okay, great. That's awesome. Thank you so much. If you're there for a week, 2 weeks, and you're making $500 an hour, then you're doing a terrible job. And that's how we can judge the work of groups like the United Nations worldwide, the efforts when it comes to the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and so on, is you're getting way too much money to do way too poor a job for us to respect you and to take what you're saying straight. Either you're just ridiculously incompetent, you can't see your nose in front of your face, or you're lying. Speaking of that, refresher course on expenses. Documents show Prime Minister approved $7,400 tab for, quote, refreshments at a Privy Council meeting. This is the Prime Minister's sort of secret cabal of advisors who help him define policy. And as we know in our country, all policies directed out of the PMO and our $200,000 a year members of Parliament are virtually useless because they're not allowed to be useful. And so, you know, this is where the corruption is, the centralization of power. It says here, Prime Minister Stephen Harper personally approved a $7,400 tab for, quote, refreshments for public servants about 3 months before his government announced a crackdown on hospitality expenses. Harper's signature appears on an August 26th approval form asking to endorse the refreshment expense for a meeting of staff from the Privy Council Office, the Prime Minister's own department. The so-called town hall meeting, it's a private meeting at the Harbour Castle Westin in downtown Ottawa, where meeting rooms for the affair cost taxpayers about $5,000 an hour, and they call it a town hall meeting. even the cover of the Metro says so-called town hall meeting. Even they can't take what the feds called this straight, which is amusing. It says here, the Conservatives' 2009 federal budget imposed a two-year freeze on spending for travel, conferences, and hospitality in all government departments, holding those expenses to 2008-2009 levels. And last month, Treasury Board's President Stockwell Day further tightened restrictions, announcing tougher government-wide rules effective for 2011. And this is from the Canadian Press. It says here, 42,000 town halls for Privy Council Office staff were inaugurated by the Conservatives in 2006 and have rapidly risen in cost over the years, from $19,000 to $42,000, the bill for the latest gathering. So there you go. These little private parties. And Lord knows what the hell goes on there with, above all this and sort of networked through all this, giant satanic pedophile cults, running the scenes, promoting pedophilia in our culture and so on. Who knows what the hell $42,000 will buy you. But if this is what's publicly admitted, it's got to be even crazier behind the scenes. But that's the one of the things I'd like to get to in this article, is the difference between the Metro and what you'll see online. And I actually saved a copy of this article, for posterity, which I'll probably post later, because it went through a host of other expenses when it was just 2 hours old off of Yahoo News, off the Yahoo Canada main page, that were excessive from the Harper government and from the Privy Council. And yet this Metro sort of short article here, sort of maybe 50-100 word article here, is making it seem like that was crazy, but they're doing something about it. Move on. Knicks quick start buries Raptors. A picture of Jose Calderon shooting here, and a loss to the New York Knicks yesterday in basketball. Again, this is supposed to be our focus. Ford's pledge causes a fuss. Mayor Rob Ford vows to hire 100 new police officers. A top official says the police force already struggles to balance the budget and new hires would worsen the problem. Following through on a campaign promise, Mayor Rob Ford has vowed to hire 100 more police officers as soon as he finds the cash. Police officials are reticent to publicly refuse additional manpower, but those in high-ranking circles are questioning why the tight-fisted mayor made the costly pledge without consulting the service, its union, or its board about whether more officers are needed. And it's true, this service is pretty, this sort of mandate is pretty pretty brazen for Ford, where he just comes out and says it, and just comes out and says he's pro-cop. Now, I'm not pro or anti-cop, I'm pro and anti the work of an individual within this system where we all have to kind of struggle with different responsibilities, different obligations, and different amounts of power. But it is interesting how this is brought up, and certainly the Star is going to be sort of focused on this as the sort of quote-unquote liberal voice here in Toronto. Back to the Metro, which is the Star's publication here, courtesy of Metro International. It is the world's largest international newspaper, so if there is a system of globalization out there that wants to put some propaganda out, this is one of the places they would probably do so. Since 2005, crime is down across Toronto by about 30%. Over that same period, the force has been struggling to get a hold of its worsening financial crisis. Crisis. Everything's a crisis. Last year, the police board was left no choice but to defer millions in reserve payments in order to balance a bare-bones $900 million budget. That number is up $40 million from the previous year due to almost entirely to salary commitments. Wages and benefits account for 90% of the police budget, which is also the largest item in Toronto's $9.2 billion operating budget. The mayor and his team have estimated the new officers would cost the city $15 million a year, which includes salaries, training, and equipment. And so here you go. Here, there's basically some arguments about whether or not to hire 100 more police officers. If you saw what happened at the G20, go to TorontoG20Exposed.blogspot.com or TorontoG20Exposed.com. Go to PressForTruth.ca to see the Into the Fire teaser and some good reports on it. You can see that more cops aren't necessarily the problem. And ultimately, this is problem-reaction-solution. When we have cops at construction sites, something I frequently mention on this show is being absolutely ridiculous, just unconscionably ridiculous, when construction workers could say, hey, move. And if you have a problem with that, well, you know, they can by and large handle it. You know, and we know to respect that. We're not an uncivilized people here. You know, it's not like construction sites have been attacked. I mean, I don't see there was a, there wasn't even a problem reaction solution in terms of putting them there. They just sort of showed up one day to help direct traffic when, before that, construction workers with the yellow signs or whatever did it just fine. And they got rid of blinking signs. Put some blinking signs out there, for God's sakes. We'll see them, and we'll do our best to avoid them. Man dies in Scarborough crash. One man dead. Another was injured after a high-speed crash that ripped a car in two yesterday. If it bleeds, it leads. And a little article like this can throw some stress into you. You know, they say looking at your watch can take a few seconds off your life. Just because of the stress of knowing the time and sort of situating yourself that way. Can you imagine, you know, and you get used to that. Can you imagine other stuff, you know, that whether you get used to or not, that's even more sort of stressful and more severe. Union Gas to help families in need. Union Gas and the United Way are teaming up to warm up families in need. The utility has launched its annual winter warmth program, offering relief to low-income families who are struggling to make ends meet. A Union Gas spokeswoman said they are providing financial assistance up to $500 per household. She says customers of utility who are having trouble paying their bills can visit the Salvation Army, which will help them go through the application process. So if Union Gas is offering rebates of up to $500 per household, imagine what the crazy gas prices are. I mean, imagine what the crazy, you know, the hydro is just going absolutely nuts. The gas prices are going absolutely nuts. If these are the rebates they're offering to poor families. So, you know, and this has been long predicted as part of this. So what can we do? Well, we can accept this. We can normalize the idea that we are in a financial crisis and that we're just going to have to deal with it until it self-corrects. Or we can take, you know, the banksters to task. We can take the financial oligarchs to task. As Webster Tarpley says, if you're not fighting financial oligarchs, then you're just spinning your wheels because they are the ones really controlling things, including a lot of the solutions they offer us, like fake AIDS charities and so on. So we can normalize that. We can normalize Sodom and Gomorrah, or we can question, you know, why we're living in it, and through that questioning process, help scale back some of the things we see happening. Normalize Nazi Germany, or we can try and figure out why we're heading to we're heading in that direction, and we can take steps out there to mitigate that. Burn some DVDs, hand out some flyers, pass on some website links. Bring this stuff up in conversations, recommend things to each other in the same way that we do normally. You know, you can say, I heard this great movie, you know, there's a great movie to watch. You do the same thing with this type of information, especially when it's relevant. Don't just try and scare people, but try and show people that there are certain things they don't have to be concerned about and certain things they do, and that you can help them with that process. Before I leave you with the People's DJ, David James, spinning 4 hours of jazz brilliance that you do have to stick around for, I'd like to make another point about the G20 summit, and another point about hope. One is from Prime Minister Paul Martin, who says here, huge G20 summits absolutely absurd, from the Vancouver Sun, where he says he doesn't know what the hell 10,000 people are doing there, and he was one of the guys who started the G20 summits back in the 90s as a meeting of finance ministers. He thinks they've grown in size and they're ridiculous, and that there's no way those meetings are efficient. Want JP Morgan to crash? Buy silver from Max Kaiser. Was it $16 a few months ago? Was it $25 about a month ago? Is now at about $29 an ounce. Strong recommendation to buy silver. There's a global campaign to crash JP Morgan, and of course to get $500 silver, which silver is projected to go up to. So you can see that when gold was silver was $5 an ounce 10 years ago, gold was $267 an ounce, and now silver's at 30 and gold's at 1400. Precious metals are a good place to be financially. Check out Max Kaiser from The Guardian UK on December 2nd for the rest of that article. And finally, a word on hope from Fritz Springmeier. And that is this. This is a legendary researcher, Fritz Springmeier. However, my ongoing job is to give people hope. I'm always ready to speak or write about hope. What I noticed after he was framed and incarcerated and is now out on sort of halfway leave what I notice is that people are in general more aware about the NWO and the powers that be, but their hope has not increased. Humanity must see hope also within their options and obstacles. To lack hope is to give into the problem. The world power has been giving us, quote, revelation of the method through Hollywood and other means to destroy our hope. They manipulate us into thinking we are double-blinded without good solutions. How often do we think we only have a choice between the lesser of two evils? We must begin to see our good choices. We must begin to see our best choices. And that was from Fritz Springmeier from henrymacow.com from December 2nd, writing about hope. He's a guy who's been working on this for 30, 40, 50 years, was jailed for it, used to give lectures back in the 80s on this, and he's observing. He says, we can't just be news junkies, and we have to have hope in doing something more than learning about this. So let's all get into that. I'm out of here, folks. Have yourself a fantastic Monday. It's cold out there, so take care of yourselves. We'll see you on Thursday. David James is up next.